Okay. So this morning we'll discuss verse 16 and 17. We'll chant 17. And just a little comment before we begin. How did everyone feel this morning? This is, you know, Monday morning after really active weekend. I was thinking, No, happiness in the mode of ignorance is there's a hangover afterwards and there's regret and there's lethargy and people can't get up in the morning and they're feeling bummed out and hungover and, you know, mode of ignorance, happiness. And what we've just been through, my goodness, what a world of difference. Anyway. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Daiteya Chandana Vane Jatoyam Kantaka Dramaha Yan Mulon Mula Parashor Vishnur Nalayator Bhakaha Daitya Chandana Vane Jatoyam Kantaka Dramaha Yan Mulon Mula Parashor Vishnur Nalayator Bhakaha. Daitya of the demoniac family. Chandana Vane in the sandalwood forest. Jataha born. I am this. Kantakadrumaha, thorn tree, yat, of which, mula, of the roots, anmula, in the cutting, parashaho, who is like an axe, vishnoho, of Lord Vishnu, Nalayataha, the handle. Arbakaha, boy. Translation, Prahlad is going to be insulted. This rascal, Prahlad, has appeared like a thorn tree in a forest of sandalwood. To cut down sandalwood trees, an axe is needed. And the wood of the thorn tree is very suitable for the handle of such an axe. Lord Vishnu is the axe for cutting down the sandalwood forest of the family of demons. And this Prahlad is the handle for that axe. Exactly, they're complimenting him. He's the handle of Lord Vishnu's axe for cutting down demoniac civilization. What a nice compliment, although they're thinking otherwise. Purport. The thorn trees generally grow in deserted places, not in sandalwood forests, but the seminal brahmanas, Shanda and Amarka, compared the dynasty of the Daitya Hiranyakashipu to a sandalwood forest and compared Prahlad Maharaj to a hard, strong thorn tree that could provide the handle of an axe. They compared Lord Vishnu to the axe itself. An axe alone cannot cut a thorn tree, or to speak of sandalwood tree. It needs a handle, which may be made of the wood of a thorn tree. Thus, the thorn tree of demoniac civilization can be cut to pieces by the axe of Vishnu Bhakti, or devotional service to Lord Krishna. Some of the members of the demoniac civilization, like Prahlad Maharaj, may become the handle for the axe to assist Lord Vishnu, and thus the entire forest of demoniac civilization can be cut to pieces. Chivalrous talk. So go back to text 16. Aniyatam arhe vetram. Please bring me a stick. This Prahlad is damaging our name and fame because of his bad intelligence called projection. One's own defect is seen to be the defect of another. Because of his bad intelligence, durbuddhi, he has now become like a cinder in the dynasty of the demons, indicating like a fire, and something from the fire goes away from the fire and becomes just a chunk of carbon. So this, like a cinder, useless in our powerful dynasty. Now he needs to be treated by the fourth of the four kinds of political diplomacy. Purport. In political affairs, when a person disobediently agitates against the government, four principles are used to suppress him. Legal orders. Pacification. The offer of a post. Or finally, weapons. When there are no other arguments, he's punished. In logic, this is called argumentum ad baculum, Latin. Vedic culture has it, Chinese culture has it, Latin culture has it. It's as old as things, old as existence. When the two seminal brahmanas, Shanda and Amarka, failed to extract from Prahlad Maharaj the cause for his having opinions different from those of his father, they called for a stick with which to chastise him to satisfy their master, Hiranyakashipu. Because Prahlad had become a devotee, they considered him to be contaminated by bad intelligence and to be the worst descendant of the family of demons, as it is said, where ignorance is bliss, it is folly to be wise. Now, where does that come from? British literature or Shakespeare or anybody know? You can Google it, Lefter. I mean, Google knows everything. It's our culture. Okay. In a society or family in which everyone is a demon, for someone to become a Vaishnava is certainly folly. So don't make that mistake. Don't become a devotee. Thus, Prahlad Maharaj was charged with bad intelligence because he was among demons, including his teachers, who are supposedly brahmanas. Paragraph. The members of our Krishna consciousness movement are in a position similar to that of Prahlad Maharaj. Listen to this. All over the world, 99% of the people are godless demons. Whoa. Send that to the Soviet government and have them say, this is good literature. And the Chinese government is paying for its publication. And therefore, our preaching of Krishna consciousness following in the footsteps of Prahlad Maharaj is always hampered by many impediments. Because of their fault of being devotees, American boys who have sacrificed everything for preaching Krishna consciousness are charged with being members of the CIA. There was a historical event on the floor of the Indian, whatever it's called, parliament. They were talking about, because one of the members of parliament reported it to our devotees, you know, the Hare Krishna movement is growing and growing and growing. And some member of the parliament stood up and said, they must have the backing of the American government. In fact, maybe, you know, behind the whole thing is the CIA. It hit, you know, Indian newspapers. And Prabhupada was saying, just see, in India they're saying we're with the American government and the CIA, and over here, you know, we're brainwashed. And, you know, just these are, he was saying, these are symptoms to indicate we're becoming successful. Because if we weren't successful, people would pay no attention at all. Who's going to speak about something insignificant on the floor of the Indian parliament? So he took it, he was encouraged. Just see, we're becoming successful. People are becoming, you know, significantly opposed. Moreover, the seminal brahmanas in India, who say that one can become a brahmana only if born in a brahmana family, charge us with ruining the Hindu system or religion. Of course, the fact is that one becomes a brahmana by qualification, because we are training Europeans and Americans to become qualified and are awarding them with rabbinical status. We are being charged with destroying the Hindu religion. You know, Lord Chaitanya was charged by the brahmanas in Navadvip of destroying Hindu religion. So, we're in good company. Nonetheless, confronting all kinds of difficulties, we must spread the Krishna consciousness movement with great determination, like that of Prahlad Maharaj. In spite of being the son of the demon Hiranyakashipu, Prahlad never feared the chastisements of the seminal brahmana sons of a demoniac father. There are many cases in commentary by our acharyas where an exalted personality or exalted Vaishnava or Krishna is being criticized, like exchanges between Krishna and some demon before they do a battle. And then in our commentary, the acharyas take the very words that they use to scold Krishna or chastise Krishna or insult Krishna and take another meaning and turn it around, and it becomes a glorification. Because we don't like hearing criticism of exalted personalities, which happens when one has a dur buddhi or bad intelligence to defend or support or to protect one's position. It's part of an envious mentality that those that are in a superior position, one tries to bring them down. So whether that person is the supreme person or one who's representing the supreme person, it's part of the demoniac mentality to make some criticism of that person, as exactly what's going on here. Well, whereas in fact they're honoring Prahlad, he's the handle, Vishnu is the axe of the handle, and together, Vishnu and his bhakta, Prahlad, are introducing Vishnu bhakti through the medium of Prahlad, like this discussion we had the other day of who is the deliverer, Lord Vishnu, or Krishna is the deliverer, and he acts through his devotee. Or he may do himself. Or by having his devotee, for example, having his devotee sing and praise his name, this is the Yuga Dharma, Krishna becomes present. Or speak, vibrate the message of Srimad Bhagavatam, widely broadcast the message of Srimad Bhagavatam. This is the way, according to Srimad Bhagavatam, that the Supreme Lord made a plan to restore religious principles in this age of Kali. And those who take shelter have that protection. They're protected by the sound vibration of Srimad Bhagavatam. Of course, we need to abide by the message of Srimad Bhagavatam, but at least we're afforded that protection by hearing and chanting its message. And then, in turn, broadcasting that message further has it's Vyasadeva's plan or response to the influence of the age of Kali, what to do. Of course, he compiled the Vedas, but insufficiently glorifying the personality of Godhead. It's specific to it's where devotees take shelter when they look around and see rapid, accelerated degradation caused by the influence of Kali, and technology is a great assistant to the age of Kali by using rapid transmission of degrading sound vibration and images and messages and so forth. Just two very quick anecdotal things. Sridhar Swami, our Prabhupada disciple Sridhar Swami, stayed for some time in New York. We associated together a lot. But prior to that, along with Giriraj Maharaj and others, he was he was the congregation development director in Bombay, and you know, what does that mean? That's huge service. How many people in Bombay, and how many people became members in Bombay, and he was the director of that whole energy. And then after some time, he wanted a break from that situation, so he came to New York. And I remember very clearly one lecture, crowded temple room on a Sunday evening program, and he was sharing historically over several centuries invasion from the north, from other non-Hindu groups of people wanted to control India, and part of the way to control was to break the fabric of faith and practice within the Vedic tradition, but they were unable to do so. They burned libraries and they pillaged this and that and the other thing, but they weren't able to break the fabric of faith and culture. And then pause. But in a short period of time, at least then it was five-star TV, has rapidly, through technology, rapidly degraded the fabric of faith and adherence to the practices of Vedic tradition within India today. But to speak of, you know, the more modern forces of technology, internet, and we don't need to go into it, what internet can do if it's abused, or the pollution opportunity if one becomes curious. You can get polluted really fast. like faster than the blink of the eye, really fast. And then once contaminated, it has this way of being addicting. Now there's, technology can have its beneficial effect. I spoke something like this at Ford Motor Company not so long ago, a couple months ago. And afterwards a lady was in the audience, an American lady came forward and said, basically, you know, I take exception to your speaking this way. I didn't bring it up during your presentation. Specifically, I had shared anecdotally that in the past 2 weeks, I had three parents come and speak to me about how their child, son or daughter, had lost it. Their interest in education, their interest in quality life, and their, by, you know, curiosity going into the dabbling with video games on online stuff, and, you know, they were now hooked. They couldn't do without it. They were addicted. Like a drug addiction, they had lost all, you know, for parents, Indian parents in particular, you know, achieving academically is one of the musts. It's must. And if there's, anyway, you get the idea. So she didn't like that comment. I was just commenting anecdotally. So she said, my two sons, they learned so much about da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da and da-da-da-da-da-da, da-da-da-da. So it has the proper utilization of something has its beneficial effect. Case in point, utilization of technology has helped Srila Prabhupada spread Krishna consciousness in an unprecedented way. He used technology. But it was a anasaktasya vishayan model, not the get used by technology, but utilizing technology. Or utilizing objects for the purpose of serving Krishna. That's possible when one's bhakti is strong. And then when bhakti is strong, there's a brake pedal and a steering wheel. You know when to say no, and you know when to turn left instead of right. But that's, Krishna gives that intelligence how to come to him through various methods, from within the heart and through the teachings of devotion. Anyway, enough on that detour. Demoniac civilization accelerates by utilization of products of material intelligence. In devotion, we are, on the one hand, we're wary, in principle, of products of material devotion. And on the other hand, we may utilize those things. Bhakti Siddhanta was a forerunner of the principle of Yukta Vairagya, as was his father, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and then successive acharyas. And we're meant to do the same. At the same, simultaneously, we're meant to be very cautious. But even when we're doing something, in utilizing something in service to Krishna, to be very, very cautious. We may end up being, you know, the axe handle of the purposes of demoniac civilization. While the initial thought was good intention. It can easily, like Prabhupada would give the example of shaving with a razor. So, during his time, razors were a little different than the ones we have. But the principle was shaving with a razor can be utilized for a beneficial purpose. And on the other hand, a little inattention and you got a big bloody mess. So utilize, but be very attentive. Be purpose-driven and be very careful. Something like this discussion about enchanting, being attentive. It's very powerful. We have to be attentive when chanting. Not only so we get the right results, it's just we don't nourish other things. The weeds may also be nourished, thinking, you know, wrong thoughts and so forth and so on. We have to be attentive. Attentive. I was thinking that same thought, coming back from, I went to Naperville for their Sunday program after this one. And on the way back, they'd have these big signs. Safe driving means, what does it say? Attentive? Attentiveness? Something like that? Huh? Sober? No, it wasn't saying, there was another one. Safety means attentive driving or something like that. Something like that. So I was thinking, yeah, safety means attentive chanting. Not just chanting. Safety means attentive chanting. Attentive chanting has an implication. Not inattentive. Not chanting and the mind is going somewhere and you're nourishing that somewhere else by the power of chanting. It's remove the weeds and safety means attentive chanting. So Prahlad was fearless. He was attentively chanting, even in the face of harshness from those who considered him to be an enemy and to be chastised. But how exalted to be the handle of the acts of Lord Vishnu. How glorious, being the instrument, nimitta matram bhava savyasachin, in the language of Bhagavad Gita, becoming the instrument. Because then the instrument, it's, let's say, a trumpet. Boop, 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 boop. So the instrument is the instrument, and then the sound is coming from the person using the instrument. So similarly, when we're being an instrument, it's Krishna who's being present. Just like that little exercise when we're chanting, Krishna is present. It's so nice that just inviting people to make, of course Krishna is everywhere present as in his Paramatma feature, etc. But to consciously bring one's consciousness to that and to invite Krishna, who is very kind, just by his name being chanted, he's there. Or by the message of Srimad Bhagavatam, he's there. In his deity form, he's there. Of course, we need to regard the scripture and regard the name and regard the deity form properly, because otherwise his presence is not certainly not going to be detected, and he may choose to check out and not make himself accessible. So if the intention is that restoring of relationship and awakening that tendency through the primary means, chanting of the holy name, how wonderful. And then to be an instrument. I'm going to send out a little message. I'll end with this. I'm going to send out a little message to our North American Temple President Forum, saying, heads up everybody, when there's a Grateful Dead concert in your area, send out a big Harinam party. From the reports that I heard of the response, in fact, what Acharya Nishtha informed me was just from Friday night, some people came to the Sunday program. How many cards do you pass out in Harinam in proportion to that, how many people come? Very few. Here's an example of, these are, whatever their mode of nature is, whatever covering they may be undergoing, somehow they have, there's a responsiveness to Krishna. I'm just sharing that. I'm going to encourage. Send your Harinam party book distributors and prasadam. And who knows? The first time I met Druta Karma was he was an attendee of a Grateful Dead concert. There was a group of us. Wherever there were Grateful Dead concerts, we went. And we had, because we went regularly, there was a relationship with the performers. So Devi Shakti was the one, because she's just such a sweet personality. Prasadam was prepared, and she went, you know, knocked on the door of their, wherever that room is, where they, before they go on stage, and she would bring prasadam for all the performers. It was like a routine. You know, she didn't even need a pass. She just was Devi Shakti, and she went right and knocked on the door, and they opened up the door. Oh, thank you very much. And they took prasadam before they went on stage. Every concert. You know, the whole group. They loved the devotees, and the audience loved the devotees. So when we went to that particular, it was upstate New York. I can't remember. Might have been Binghamton or Ithaca or something. I forget. And there was Druta Karma sitting there on the lawn. Everyone, you know, was going in, and he was still sitting on the lawn. So we gave him a book. He'll remember the detail. The next time he comes here, you can ask him. He loves telling the story. And he just sat there the whole time. He didn't even go into the concert, just read the book. And then he was still sitting there. When we came back out, we gave him the burfi that we had left, the whole glob of burfi, because the program that we had, it was really simple. I was sharing this with Acharya Nishtha. So we went inside, and we didn't have to worry about security because, you know, we were Hare Krishna guys. We probably went in dhotis, just walking around the crowd, and everyone's intoxicated to the sky. And we just did three things. You know, we had like a plastic bucket with a handle, you know, those classic Hare Krishna buckets, loaded with peanut butter burfi or some other kind of burfi. And we just, you know, went, put out your hand. That was the first line. Put the burfi in their hand. Just like kids, you know. They know what it was because they, you know, were the Hare Krishna guys. They know what it is. And then comes the book that's on the other side. Here, take a book. We didn't have to show the pictures or explain anything. They knew who we were. And, you know, do you have this one yet? Because we knew they already had a number of books. So we had an array of books. And then the third line was, you know, give a donation, whatever you can. And just go to the next person, all during the entire concert, right on the floor of the concert. And then when everyone was going out, it was a routine. And there was Druta Karma, who had finished reading book number one, and we gave him books number 3, 4, and 5, or something like that, and a whole bunch of whatever was left over burfi. And his life changed. And I'm sure there's other experiences like that, but the holy name is powerful, Prabhupada's books are powerful, prasadam is powerful, who knows? As the kind of call to the charge, I'll read Prabhupada's words and we'll end. Nonetheless, confronting all kinds of difficulties, we must spread the Krishna consciousness movement with great determination, like that of Prahlad Maharaj. To spread the Krishna consciousness movement, we have to become Krishna conscious, and then we can spread it. But they go together. One helps the other. Any comments or questions? Jitendriya, you're going to tell us a Grateful Dead story? You're gonna...
I remember once the devotees went to a Grateful Dead concert and they were handing out stuff. And this one guy got offended and he said, "I don't come to your place of worship to disturb you. You shouldn't come to ours." And then at the O'Hare Airport, I think it was Vaisheshika, I told him that Jerry Garcia was there, and he says, "Well, give him some prasadam." So we went to offer him some prasadam, and he said, "Where's the hot dog stand?" So he didn't want any prasadam, I guess, okay, that day, but something that came to mind.
Okay.
Jerry for president. They wanted him to be president, the Deadheads.
Okay.
But their religion is over, I think. That was the last concert.
Modes of nature are very active. Come up front here. Here comes the microphone.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, thank you for your class. What year was this that you drew to Karma Prabhu? What year was that?
Oh, I have a bad memory for years. 70s. Long ago, that year. Long ago. I have a bad memory for years. I don't know. He'll know.
And you were mentioning one point how Prabhupada and the different devotees would transform something negative into something positive. Like, people will criticize them and they'll make it like, you know, we always see they have positive outlooks in life. And I have a question regarding a point you made. I forgot exactly.
You have a question regarding what?
One point you made, I forgot. You said something about envy or something. And I'm just thinking of one Bhaktivinoda Thakur prayer, Amar Jivan, the only one I'm aware of. It's one of my favorite ones. And but he mentions in that prayer, we could see in the prayers, I think it was about humility. He mentions many times that such and such, I'm envious of others, you know, I'm a demon. He never says, you know, others are envious of me, you know, they're, you know, jealous of my bhakti. So we could see in the lives of, you know, all these different saints is that they're not so concerned how much for our own spiritual, like, let's say, peace of mind. Is that, because isn't it a false ego to think that others are envious of you also? Because Krishna's given us these gifts, so we can see that people are absorbed in
these thoughts. What's behind any thought isn't necessarily material consciousness. Depends on the consciousness. Someone may think in a self-centered way or egotistical way. Someone may thinking in the opposite. Like Prahlad, you know, he's saying, you know, my goodness, here's friends and enemies program. So you're seeing me as an enemy. It's not like he became inimical because they were seeing him as enemy. He was just remarking, oh, I've heard about it. Now I see it happening. Friends, enemies. So it doesn't necessarily mean self-centered. One can just be seeing things as they are. Jai Jagannath, go ahead.
On the message of being an instrument for Krishna, it seems like one motto is we try to be an instrument for Krishna, and another motto may be one is spontaneously an instrument of Krishna because of their elevation in Krishna consciousness. It's just naturally. As sadhakas, I guess we're on the side of trying to be an instrument for Krishna, and therefore the message of being attentive and so on, otherwise danger at any moment. And so my question is, okay, on a personal level, I just speak on a personal level, when I've heard the example of being an example for others, like the Bhagavad Gita message 321 or something, I've not always been able to resonate with it because I'm like, I can only be as much an example for others as my Krishna consciousness basically allows me to be. And even if I try to be an example for others, inevitably, with the movement of time and my actual consciousness comes out and it can be problematic for others. So I'm trying to balance these two sort of being an instrument and just spontaneously, trying to be an instrument and spontaneously being an instrument Because I've not always been able to resonate with the trying to be. I can just try to be sincere, I guess, in my practices. But I feel like when that consciousness comes in me, I have to try to be an example for others or and so on, that it leads to problems on a psychological level. And
well, two things, at least. One is, on the one hand and on the other hand, the mood of service, and then the other hand is doership. So we want to avoid the doership. What we want is a mood of service. So being an example or trying to be an example in the mood of service takes away the false ego doership thought. And second point is use this language. To me, it's like a bhakti compass, meaning the driving force is the mood of service, and where should I head? I should head towards, you know, whatever the destination is. And the destination is being in service to others. Let me be, as far as Krishna permits, that which will be pleasing to Krishna, and in that way an example for others. But it's leaving aside the doership part. It would seem to me that the impediment is the doership part, not as you described, like I have my own nature, and after some time, you know, the impetus, the impelling striving to be an example kind of goes away, and who I really am comes out. So it's just, you know, stay with a compass. It's not there's using that language, it's just like directional. You know, a common use of that language compass that I've heard before is some people don't have a moral compass. So morality helps to guide people to do what's moral, what's ethical, what's the mode of goodness. Strive towards the mode of goodness as moral compass, whatever the cost of that might be, like telling the truth, even if it may not, you know, in the mode of passion, look like it's in your favor. You stay with moral compass. You speak the truth, etc. So this is a devotional compass as far as my picture of the question you're asking. And a third point is, as in fact, what somebody like yourself does, it sets a standard. Whatever, you know, I don't want to be in that role, please. Leave me alone. let me be myself instead of being, you know, an example. By default, however, it's just like, I think it's okay to share this. A conversation that I had over the weekend and before the weekend with Kandanam and Nityapriya was, what you do, it's example setting. Because you're of the younger generation, you're in that position, and Shamsaki also, about, like it or not, you know, you're a role model for the younger ones, because you're doing something, and they're like, oh, well, that's how you do it. You may not want them to think like, no, I'm me, and, you know, don't think like that. But they're going to think like that. Now, they may not do as others have done, but it's a principle that just governs in society. Yadyadacharati Shrestha, that the very language, the Evetara, is others, and then there's persons who are Shrestas, just by nature. Example setting, precedent. So I may, you know, don't think of me as a, I don't want to think of myself that way, and, you know, leave me alone, let me be myself. It's going to happen anyways. So now, in the mood of service. Nothing wrong with being in the mood of service. No, nothing. It doesn't inhibit bhakti at all. It nourishes bhakti. And then you go to the spontaneous side, and a person who, into his heart, they're thinking service. They're setting an example. I'm thinking now just of Pundarik Vidyaniti, you know, because he was on such a platform of Krishna consciousness, he was not setting an example for Gadadhar Pandit. He was the opposite. But his deep Krishna consciousness was example setting. So that's on another, when one is in fact on another platform, that's something else. And until we're on that other platform, the reality is we're setting an example. Or Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj, you know, the degree of intensity of renunciation. Like, who can follow that example? No one. It's inhuman. We would die. Physically, we would die if we lived our life like he lived, or Raghunath Das Goswami. But, they're living according to their nature, and they're setting an example, at least directionally, and not unaware that they're setting an example directionally. You know, it's sometimes doing things that are very mysterious. Especially Gaur Kishore Das Babaji, and how he would speak, and... But he was in that position. Anyway, mood of service. Bhakti compass. Something else? Yes? Yes.
My question was also about the instrument, being an instrument point. So we hear that the disciple is to be 100% surrendered to the spiritual master. And my understanding is that the bona fide disciple, he actually develops this sense of transparency or complete instrumentality to the desires or the will of the spiritual master. That he becomes an agent through which his spiritual master can act through him.
Yeah.
Is that correct understanding?
Yes. You're just seeking verification, that was your question?
Yeah, that was the question.
Well, then you can extend it. What you said is correct, and then you can extend it. That is, let's think, Srila Prabhupada, he saw himself as an instrument of exactly, you know, the will and the model of how Bhaktisiddhanta did what Bhaktisiddhanta did. Now, he had his personality, and so he modified and adjusted things according to personality and circumstance, but his life was, listen to Rabindra Sarup Prabhu on this one. He can go on and on and on with, you know, detail and detail and detail and example. And Prabhupada was an instrument of Bhaktisiddhanta's will to the medium of his own personality and adjusting things, details, but carrying forward the principle. And so then keep going. And what did Bhaktisiddhanta do? It was, you know, his father. And what did his, keep going. So it's ultimately is the will of our disciplic succession and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his will and Rupa Goswami and keep, come back down again. So that the instrumentality connects one with the entire disciplic succession. It's thrilling. Because what an awesome disciplic succession. What an opportunity. So let me try to get it right. And it's not easy to get it right. It's easy to get it wrong. Or, you know, be off by, you know, 3 degrees or 50 degrees or, you know, it's easy to get things wrong. Real easy. Or get some things right. Like the discussion we had the other day. Get certain principles in place and miss out certain other principles. And spread it out over time, and what happens? So the principle that you brought up is very important, and it just extended is all I'm doing.
I guess my question is, how does one make sure that their individuality, it doesn't go against, in other words, in the case of Bhakti Siddhanta Maharaj, we see his methodology, and sometimes
you ask, you know, when the spiritual master is present, you ask, and otherwise, we have, you know, there's a standard that Prabhupada gave, which is you ask five brahmanas, or we have authorities who are invested with at least the responsibility, and they can properly utilize or wrongly utilize the authority invested in them. But that's something that we're to do. That's how you can evaluate that, the answer to that question. This is a descending process, so we're looking up. Like that little exercise, you know, great personalities within the scriptures, great personalities within your life, and we're looking for descending mercy. We're very cautious about individuality is absolutely natural to be encouraged, fantastic. And caution is also absolutely important, essential, and will help keep us in fidelity, because our individuality may very well be mixed or polluted or distorted or off kilter, and therefore the necessity of receiving guidance and training and so forth. So we look. To be under the guidance of someone, not just a, yeah. For me, as the, you know, a disciple of Srila Prabhupada, I may have my idea, natural, and you know, my inspiration, my individuality. Now I'm in a society of persons who are, so I have to hold myself accountable and receive guidance, and I do it regularly. I do lots of things. I'm just speaking personally. I do lots of things that are individual, with individual inspiration. But before I go running down the field and doing those things, I consult. One case, this thing with the Western outreach, it was an inspiration. I heard common sense. I became inspired, and I consulted with others. What do you all think? Ah, fantastic! Great, okay. And then, even as I went along, sharing this with Dayata, because it's, you know, similar to the model of training and education, etc. So I drew a plan. And then I shared it with people that are good at reviewing plans. They'll actually take the time and give careful thought and consideration to the plan. And they made some suggestions, and Raj Bihari was one of them. You know, by ashram and age and other considerations, I'm his senior, but I'm consulting him because he's very thoughtful. He has lots of experience, and I respect his capacity. And he gave some very good suggestions, and it ended up inviting him to be a facilitator. Because what we did, this is some detail, but what we did that first evening, Friday evening, was what he wanted to do was not just transfer inspiration and information, but get the audience in a reflective receiving mode, so the information would go in, not bounce, or in one ear and out the other ear. You know, like, why are we here? Sankalpa. and nourishing that in his own way of doing it. He's, you know, individuality is preserved, but we look to others to get the best result and, you know, if we're heading not in a correct way, eager to receive that. I'm going to end. See the Prabhupada key. Die.